Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0, the mental health podcast that's changing the discussion one voice at a time, featuring guests that will help end the stigma and keep talking mental health. And now, here are your hosts, Rebecca and Joe Lombardo.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Voices for Change 2.0.
Yeah, thanks for tuning in, and if you heard me cough just now, I'm sorry about that. I got a little tickle in my throat, but it is what it is. So, hello, and welcome, and thanks for tuning in, and thanks for taking time out to listen to us.
Yeah, absolutely, all that good stuff.
And my coughing. So here's something funny before we jump into what we're going to jump into. You guys know, if you've been listening for a while to us, that, you know, we've got, it's not new entrance music anymore. It's relatively new. We've only had it since January.
I'm not sure.
February, so earlier this year anyway. And, you know, we, it bops. Okay. It's got a bit of a rock and groove to it, and I'm always bouncing my head whenever we hear it when it first starts playing. But I got a little chuckle, a little smile in my face as the music's playing, and I look over at my wife and she's bopping her head, which I haven't seen her do before. So I got a huge kick out of that. I'm just kind of boo-doo-doo-doo-doo, and she's just bopping her head back and forth, and it was cute, guys. I'm telling you what. And she had no idea I was watching her the whole time either. She was looking at something else. And, you know.
So, well, what can I say? I'm just so adorable.
You are adorable. You are the best thing to ever happen to me, lady. And, you know, this is just proof that 19 years on, I still find you as adorable or more than the day we got married.
Well, thank you, honey, and the feeling is very mutual.
Ah, thanks. All right, if you guys are done throwing up now.
So, yeah, who watched Thursday Night Football? Because we sure did. We are Chiefs fans.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Texans fans.
Yep. Sorry, not sorry. Yeah, so shout out to Patrick Mahomes. You know, did a hell of a job. The whole team did a hell of a job. It's an absolutely great, great game. We enjoyed it very much. And it's funny because in this year of 2020, there's nothing feels normal. You know, nothing feels normal this year. And it hasn't since probably March. And getting to watch football the other night was finally a little sliver of normalcy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they actually had people out in the stands. The stands weren't packed by any means. There was social distancing.
They said that the stadium was at 22%, and everybody had to wear masks and practice social distancing and all that good stuff.
Yeah. So, and then, like, I know there's only a few cities that are doing that. I know Kansas City is one of them. I know here in Detroit, they're, as of right now, they're not going to have any fans in the stands. It's all going to be, like, you know, cardboard stand-ups and stuff. And they actually have a thing where you can buy a cardboard stand-up of you and have it in the stands. And, you know, it's there, I guess, the entire season or until they start bringing people back in. They're talking about that this week on the local news station. And I would consider doing it, but for what they're charging to do it, I'll pass.
No, that's okay. We aren't that attractive.
Yeah, I guess there's that too. That we're not that attractive.
It was kind of funny seeing a cardboard stand up of The Rock leaning over on the Queen of England.
That was funny. That was some pretty good stuff because they had stand ups in the stands there at the game too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so that was that was some good stuff. And like we've been getting a kick out of watching the odd baseball game here and there, and some places will have those big heads. If you guys ever see them, the big cardboard heads.
Mm-hmm.
Getting a kick out of seeing some of those in the stands. So they're definitely being creative with things. One thing that was really cool with the game was that, if you're watching any other sporting event, like I know for baseball they're doing this, they're piping in crowd noise to give a little bit more of a sense of normalcy.
I think they piped it in for wrestling too.
Yeah, they didn't for the football game.
It was loud.
It was loud, and it was all that 22% capacity of people.
It said what it was like 17,000 people,
something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a respectable number. There are some arenas in the country that are only about that big. So I mean that's nothing to sneeze at. I mean I get it. It's not the same as having 50, 60, 100,000 people in a stadium.
Right.
But it was still loud enough that we could easily hear it on the TV, and that was a big part of that whole normalcy feeling that I was talking about a few minutes ago, and just the fact that, it's this time of year and you're starting to see some of the other hallmarks of fall popping up, your pumpkin spice lattes and pumpkin spice everything, and,
mm-hmm.
Caramel apple stuff, and the Halloween decorations and whatnot, and there's finally a chill in the air. At least around here. I know not so much down south, but, it's just a reminder, at least to me, that, life goes on, even in the midst of a pandemic, and life is nowhere near what it was this time last year. Everybody's world is topsy-turvy. And, it's just weird because with everything that is going on, you still have, the changing the seasons and the holidays coming up and all this different stuff. And it's a weird feeling, because there's a part of you that has that familiarity and that sense of normalcy. And then you've got the other part that's walking around wearing masks and social distancing and basically our new normal. I don't know what to tell you. It's strange times for sure, but hopefully we're finally starting to step in the right direction with all of this, at least to some sort of degree.
And we can't go without mentioning the what was it called? The display of unity that the Flyers showed at the beginning of the, with the Black Lives Matters movement. And it was very moving. I had a lump in my throat watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was a little weird with some of the Texans leaving the field for the two anthems, and the Chiefs leaving the field for the American anthem, just because they didn't want anybody, confusing what their reactions were to the songs or whatever. They didn't want people to say, oh, they, stood up for this song. They didn't stand up for that song, whatever the case may be.
Right.
So that was a little bit weird. And I heard that some other teams are going to be doing that where they're not on the field for the national anthem.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a different thing, and I'm not criticizing them for it. I think that right now is sort of a time where we all have to kind of try and see what works, because
mm-hmm.
what's been happening doesn't.
Yeah.
So we have to try new things and just, you know, throw it against the wall and see if it sticks. And, you know, I'm all for, you know, trying something different to see if we can raise more awareness.
Cool. Yeah. It's, things need to change, you know, and we're seeing that, you know, I know that people look back on the 60s and herald it as this time of, you know, civil rights and change was made back then. And I think what we're seeing now today is a continuation of that spirit, which is, you know, it's historical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I know for us, we're trying to be on the right side of history, and, you know, we hope you are too. You know, people need to realize that, you know, they keep saying the different races, you know, we're all one race, we're all the human race, and we all have the same kind of blood pumping through our veins, we all have the same kind of organs, we all have eyes and ears and nose and mouth and all that. There aren't like aliens running around or anything. Well, maybe,
that we know of.
That we know of. you know, what people are fighting about is pigmentation, a color of the skin, or, you know, who you choose to love, you know, different things like that. You know, pigmentation, you can't control that. Well, you know, unless you go out tanning, I mean, to a degree you can, but, you know, I mean, really, it's, we're all one. We all need to recognize that and come together. You know, this feeling of superiority over the next person is imagined. It's fake. It's not real. It's, nobody is better than anybody else. You know, I'm appealing to people, you know, reach out with your heart, reach out with compassion, you know, love the person that's next to you and try to imagine, you know, if you're having a bad day or they're having a bad day, you know, none of us know what the next person's going through. None of us are walking in their shoes. They're not walking in our shoes, you know. So when you encounter somebody and maybe they're having, you know, they're blowing up about this or that, you know, it's easy to be quick to anger. And what we need to try and do is learn to be, you know, a little slower to anger and quick to listen and quick to empathize.
Yeah.
I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
So, that said, we have a guest.
We do have a guest. She has made it in from the UK. We are very excited to have her.
When did she fly in?
She made it in studio.
Okay. So,
you're hilarious.
Well, you know, you said she made it in, and I'm thinking, did she fly in? Her arm's tired? What's going on?
That's not even funny.
Yeah, it's kind of funny.
Anyway, we were having a little trouble with Blog Talk, and she had to call in. So does that clarify that a little bit for you, babe?
Thanks, honey.
Okay.
All right.
So anyway.
I'm still asking her if her arm's tired.
So she is a really, really, really good friend of mine. At least I consider her a really good friend. She's an amazing advocate for mental health and for anorexia. She is just you look at a picture of her and her face lights up a room.
Mm-hmm.
She's a beautiful human being inside and out. And we're just really, really glad to be able to talk with her today. And I hope that she's ready for us. So let's welcome into the end of the show, Miss Kara Lissette.
Hi.
Hi. So are your arms tired?
Oh, very.
Well, see? See, I told you, honey. I told you, but no.
Yeah.
You just did arm day, right? That's why your arms are tired. You did arm day, and you know tomorrow's leg day. So.
So how are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
We're hanging in there.
Yep, trying to anyway.
Do you have any questions for us before we go forward?
No, I don't think so. I made it. That's the important thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. We are happy about that we've got you. Now that we've got you, we got to figure out what we're going to do with you. But we got you. So. You want to jump in, babe?
Sure.
Okay.
So we have a question that we generally ask basically all of our guests. And so we're going to lay that one on you first, and that is, where did your mental health journey begin?
Oh, wow. Okay. So I think probably when I was around 7 or 8 is when I started getting a lot of issues around my body image. And then my eating disorder started when I was probably around 12 or 13. I also got diagnosed with a recurrent depressive disorder around that time, but then after many, many years of that feeling like it wasn't quite right, I got diagnosed with bipolar disorder in 2015. And my eating disorder has kind of just been on and off ever since then. So for the last sort of 17, 18 years, it's just come and gone over that time.
Okay. A lot of people don't know this about me, and that is that I dealt with an eating disorder for a good portion of my life. I won't go into specifics because I don't want to be triggering in any way, but if you look at me now, you wouldn't know because I'm overweight. I'm not afraid to say it. But there was a time when I wasn't, and I was much thinner than I should have been, and not healthy and not taking care of myself. And so I understand where you're coming from because it started for me at a very young age. I think I was probably 12 or 13 when I started paying attention to my weight and weighing myself, you know, literally hourly. So
yeah,
I get where you're coming from.
It's affecting people younger and younger, I think, these days as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you see the images that, you know, they put on, you know, magazines and advertisements and TV and billboards and you name it, you know, and this is supposed to be some kind of body image standard that we should all live up to. I mean, like for me, I've got a dad bod. I just do. You know, there's a belly, and it's there, and it's always been there, and it's probably always going to be there. And, you know, I don't want to look necessarily like Dwayne Johnson, but I wouldn't complain if I was in the kind of shape that, you know, somebody like a Jason Momoa or a Chris Evans, some one of those guys. If I look kind of like that, I wouldn't complain, and I'm pretty sure Beck wouldn't complain.
I complain because I wouldn't look that good.
You know, so you know, it's you know, I know it's more women than men with, you know, having body image issues, but it is still men too. You know, we're all self-conscious about different things. I missed my hair. and I can't explain what's going on with it right now, but it needs to go. So, yeah, usually my head is shaved, and right now I've got kind of a Captain Picard kind of thing going on. So,
yeah,
nice.
Yeah.
So what would you describe being bipolar and anorexic at the same time? What kind of special hell is that?
Oh, yeah, it's complicated. I think, like, one of the most, well, there's two areas of it that are really difficult. One is medication, because it was really hard for me to find a medication that wouldn't cause me any weight gain. And the first one that I took did cause quite a lot of weight gain, and that caused quite a big relapse in my eating disorder. So that that was obviously less than ideal. And it took me, I would say, probably maybe three years or so until I got like a good balance of medication that I didn't really get any side effects from. And I know there's people that aren't as lucky as me and that never end up finding medication they don't have side effects from. So I am really lucky. The second really complicated thing is that when I get manic, I don't get hungry and then I don't really eat as much. And it normally results in some sort of accidental weight loss. And accidental weight loss can very quickly lead into intentional weight loss if I've noticed that it happens. So, yeah, both those areas are really difficult to manage. My mood is, like, mostly stable because I do have quite a good combination of medication at the moment. So I take an antipsychotic and a mood stabilizer. So since 2018, my mood's been, like, pretty much stable. So I am quite lucky in that regard. But, yeah, when it's not, it is a pretty nasty combination to have going on.
Wow. Yeah. I can imagine it's got to be like walking a tightrope, you know.
Mm-hmm. Completely.
You know, my heart breaks for you. That's tough.
Yeah,
you know?
It is.
You know, I've got my own type of eating issues because I'm diabetic. And I very, very often don't eat the way I should, much to probably my doctor's chagrin and also my pancreas. But, you know, it's when I do eat better, you know, it's weird. It's like I'm fighting myself, you know, like I'll be sitting there eating a salad and wishing it was a big bowl of ice cream. And then later on, I'll go and eat a big bowl of ice cream. So, you know, I'm a mess.
You know, another thing with the eating disorder and the bipolar disorder, I know this might be kind of a strange angle to look at, but I personally have noticed that if I take certain medications on an empty stomach, they have a greater impact on me and will, you know, especially if they're for sleeping, you know, will throw me for a loop. Like I'm just talking in gibberish and can't keep my eyes open and everything like that. And I can imagine that if you're struggling with an eating disorder and trying to find a balance of medications, you don't know necessarily if it's acting the way it should because you may be taking it on an empty stomach and it might be forcing you to have more side effects that way.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. And I think something else I've found as well is that, like, if I am taking medication when I've not eaten very much, I get a lot more of the, like, nausea side effects than I would if I was eating properly. And then that makes you obviously want to take your medication less because it makes you feel sick. So it's quite a vicious cycle that you can end up getting yourself stuck in some way.
Yeah,
for sure. Jeez. Let's see here. Where are we at with our questions? Oh, okay. So, Kara, what are some of the misconceptions? Man, I can't speak today. What is that? What are some of the misconceptions people have about anorexia?
Oh, there's quite a lot. I think the main one is that you have to be underway, and that's not necessarily the case for a lot of people. And I think even though a lot of people do end up getting underway, they don't start at that point. And actually, we don't intervene, certainly in the UK anyway, I don't know about elsewhere, but we don't intervene early enough to stop people getting to the point where they're physically unwell. So that's a real problem. I think that the perception that it only happens to women is another really big one. There are lots and lots of men that have eating disorders, and the statistic in the UK used to be that it was 10%, but I've got a feeling that they've revised that and that it's actually a higher number, and I suspect it's much higher than we even have on record, because so many men either go sort of get overlooked because they're men, or don't feel like they can come forward and talk about it because it is perceived to be like a women's illness. I think there's a thing as well where people think that it's just like a bit of a diet gone wrong, and it's not at all. It's not really it is about the food, but it's not really. There's like things that are obviously underlying that kind of cause it to get to the point that it does get to. So the food is, and the weight loss and things like that are just kind of like a symptom really of what is like an underlying condition. So I would say those are the biggest ones. And another, you know, people thinking that you're just doing it because you want to look like a celebrity, and basically just because you want to be skinny, because that's not really what it's about. That's just kind of how the like deeper emotional stuff just manifests itself really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's more of a, like a body dysmorphia kind of thing, right?
Mm. Yeah,
where,
definitely.
You know, you might physically look one way, but you look in a mirror and you see yourself looking, you know, completely different, and it's usually pretty negative, and
yeah,
you know, that really messes
different.
With your head. Yeah.
Yeah, especially because people are always telling you that, you know, you look really thin, and we're really concerned about you, and you look really ill, and you just don't see it in yourself at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, and that sucks.
So what would you say your biggest struggle day to day is?
I think I've managed to tackle like a lot of the really negative behaviors that were kind of going alongside the food restriction now. Since I've been back in treatment, I would say probably like eating is probably still the most difficult, and it's not always necessarily just what I'm eating. A lot of it is around when. So I have like really specific timings of when I can eat stuff. So I won't, you know, if it's like 5 minutes until when I think I'm allowed to have lunch, I can't have it 5 minutes early. Even if I'm hungry, I have to wait until the exact time and things like that. And that's quite, that's quite disruptive to my life, really, because like a lot of it still revolves around when and where I can eat. So it's not even just about the food necessarily. It's just about all the like routines that fit in around it that are really hard to kind of deviate away from when you've been fitting into them for such a long time. So yeah, probably like an exercise I still have a bit of a problem with, but it's getting much, much better. But yeah, food is probably still my biggest one.
Alrighty, well, we are, with that, we're going to take our first break, our probably our only
break.
Yeah. But we'll be listening to a photograph by Stefan Alexander, and we will see you guys on the other side of this.
Yep, stay tuned, enjoy.
I fell in love with a photo, head over heels for a face I'll never know. Squeaky clean in a bathrobe, the hint of the skin that hides below. I can't help it, I'm already daydreaming this fantasy repeating, but nobody's stripping for me. All I got are these eyes looking out of my screen. A fiction I'm the frame. I might want nothing to do with you if we met outside the frame. I might want to put you back in.
Welcome back to Voices for Change 2.0. I'm Joe. She's Rebecca. She's cute. And on the line, someone else who is cute. We are talking all the way from over in the UK, the lovely and talented Miss Kara Lysette. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. So I thought of a question that we didn't have written down in the last couple of minutes. So I wanted to ask, with your dual diagnosis of bipolar and anorexia, what kind of impact does that have on your relationships with people, you know, your family, your friends, dating, stuff like that? Because, you know, I mean, we're social creatures, at least up until COVID hit. And, you know, I know for us, it you know, sometimes it's difficult getting out because of, you know, Beck might be having a bad day or I might be having a bad day. But how does it impact you? What do you, you know, see as far as good or bad out of it?
I mean, obviously, like, when I get depressed, socializing is a lot more difficult. But that hasn't actually happened for quite a few years now. With anorexia, that is the most difficult one because so much of how we socialize revolves around food. So, you know, you're always going out for drinks and for lunch and for dinner and out for coffee and things like that. And so much of how we socialize is around eating and drinking, that feeling like you're not able to do those things makes that really, really difficult. Also, like, when you're really poorly with an eating disorder, you're just like not a very nice person to be around a lot of the time, just because that's kind of the nature of it, really. Like, when I was like really unwell last year, I was so unhappy and so preoccupied, and I think was just really, really bad company. My friends have been amazing and they've like stuck around through all of it. But yeah, it does make socializing quite difficult because you have to be quite like creative in what you're going to do together because it's not going to be around food. Or obviously the person that's unwell just gets excluded. And luckily my friends didn't ever put me in that position, but or my family. But yeah, it does make it difficult. With my partner, like he's super supportive. We've been together for 9 years this year. So he's seen me through like a lot of bad things. but yeah, I mean, I think it was really, really difficult for him last year when I was getting really unwell, because obviously you can just see the person that you care about getting really poorly and feel really powerless to do anything about it. And like, I know that I was like really sad and really irritable and just anxious all the time. So I think I probably wasn't that great to be around during that time, which made things quite difficult. But overall, like, everyone around me is like super, super supportive. I'm really lucky. And I think actually, like, being unwell over the last year or so has kind of brought like even more people out the woodwork. So I feel like there's been like even more friends that I wasn't aware were like as good friends as they actually turned out to be before all this happened. So yeah, I've been actually really fortunate because I know that other people aren't quite as lucky as me in that situation.
Good answer.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And I can totally feel for how your partner feels, you know, in those type of situations, because I've gone through it with Beck. You know, you feel very helpless. You know, you see this person mm-hmm. that you care so much about, that you love with all your heart, in so much pain, and all you want to do is take that pain away from them. And you know, early on in our relationship, it was really tough. It was because I like to fix things, you know, and all I wanted to do was fix it. And the hardest pill to swallow was that I couldn't fix it. You know, it's, you know, Beck is the only one that can fix Beck. So all I can do is be there with her and hold her hand through it. And that's what I do, you know, and you know, it hurts to see her struggle. And it, conversely, when she's having a really good day, it makes me feel really good, you know, because I know in that moment she isn't hurting, she isn't struggling, she's laughing, she's having a good time, you know, and that's a good feeling, you know.
Yeah, so. I think for a lot of us, sometimes all we need is someone to just be there and kind of like hold our hand through it. And sometimes I know it's for the other person, it feels like that's not enough, but for us, mm-hmm. sometimes it is enough, and that's just what we need to get us through that time.
Yeah.
Mhm.
Exactly. So, cool. Well, I'm happy that you know, that you got that guy there helping you in every
yeah,
way.
Yeah, he's good.
That's good, you know, and 9 years is a long time. So
yeah.
Good on you.
Yeah.
You know.
Thanks.
And you know, I'm happy that you've got such a great group of friends that support you, and you know, they don't exclude you, because you know, we know about that too. You know, we've had it where, you know, you've got the friends that invite you, and you don't show up for whatever reason, and then eventually the invites stop coming. And then you've got the other friends that invite you, and every time they understand, you know,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
like, yeah, I'm sorry, I can't make it out today. And they're like, okay, well, no problem. We'll see you next time.
Yeah.
So.
We don't have a lot of those, though.
No, we don't.
That's unfortunately.
It's all right. It's okay. The ones we do have, we treasure. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what made you decide to come forward and tell your story?
Well, I think, like, I did write a couple of blogs anonymously, probably about maybe 5 years ago or so, maybe a little bit longer ago than that. And I was really worried about people finding out that it was me that had written them. And then I saw that they got quite a positive response. And then I joined Twitter, and I kind of found this like community of people who were all kind of sharing their stories and getting a lot of like positive feedback from it. And it was really helpful for me to read things that other people were writing and kind of get that feeling that I wasn't on my own with it, and kind of made me feel like there was just this movement out there of people that were trying to make a difference and to end stigma and to try and help other people feel like they weren't on their own with it. And I just kind of felt like I really wanted to be a part of that. And also my job is that I'm a psychiatric nurse, and I felt like it was a bit hypocritical of me to be telling my patients that they should be talking about how they're feeling without, you know, and then going home and keeping everything to myself when I wasn't at work.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of spurred me on a little bit as well. And it's actually... I didn't do it because I thought it would be helpful for me to start with. I did it because I thought it would be helpful for other people, but it has actually ended up being really helpful for me as well, because I've just made like loads of connections with really awesome people, and like I find writing really cathartic, and it's helped me feel like I've got this community that are like really supportive of me in my recovery. So sometimes when I feel like I don't really have very much faith in myself and that I haven't really got much left in me to give on a particular day, then there's this whole community of people that are like really rooting for me and like cheering me on, and that's been really helpful for me. So yeah, that's kind of why I started doing it, and then it's just grown like quite a lot since then. That's just encouraged me to keep going with it.
Yeah, well, we're going to ask you, you are very active on Twitter. Do you find it to be more of a positive experience over a negative experience? Because we all know that the trolls are out there, especially with those of us that are talking about mental health issues. They love to jump on the bandwagon and make us feel even worse about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But do you find it that it's a more positive experience for you?
90% of the time, I would say yes. It is much more positive than it is negative. But the only time I really get, sometimes I've had like things go viral and then I end up kind of reaching like the corners of Twitter that I might not reach normally, and that's when it kind of brings like the trolls out. And that's obviously always quite unpleasant. But yeah, it doesn't happen that often. So I would say like 90% of the time I find it a really positive experience. And I've met some really awesome friends through Twitter as well. And some of them I've ended up meeting in real life subsequently. So yeah, I generally find it really helpful.
Yeah, we always talk about the mental health community on Twitter and how great everybody is and how supportive they are. And it's really like I joined Twitter and I was so lost and so confused and I didn't understand what the gibberish was on the page in front of me. And eventually when I figured it out, it became vital to my healing to have these people that I could just say, hey, today's not a good day. You know, I feel this way or that way or something, and have just people just pouring in support.
Yeah.
You know, that they understand and, you know, have been there. And it's just, it's really, I can't say enough about it. It's an amazing thing to have, you know, once you finally got your fees set so that all the naysayers are blocked or muted or whatever. And you're comfortable with who you've got on your feed, then it really is a very easy process to just go on there and talk and feel supported.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think like I felt quite a lot of shame after I relapsed last year, and that community kind of took that away from me a little bit, because there was so many people that were like, do you know what happens? Recovery's not a straight line, like, you know, you can do it. And just this really nice, like, supportive community, and that definitely made me feel like a lot better about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one thing is everybody understands, you know, we're all human. We're all going to have, you know, good stretches and bad patches. And, you know, when there's a bad patch, everybody else kind of just swoops in and, you know, helps hold that person up, you know, and that's a real good feeling, you know. It's funny because, you know, we can all go from the point of view of the person that's being held up, but being one of the people that holds that person up, that gives the encouragement, is a pretty damn good feeling too. You know, it's nice knowing that, hey, if you're struggling, you know, I can tell you, hey, you know, you're doing the best you can. You're doing a great job. We're all proud of you. We all love you. And, you know, being that support, even though we've never met in person, and specifically in our case, there's an ocean between us. you know, it's just it's a real good feeling like you're this part of this community and everybody has everybody else's back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so special. It really is.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you talked a little bit about your blog. Tell us a little bit more. What do you generally write about, and where can people find it if they want to check it out?
So my blog is called Cara's Corner. So if you Google it, I think I'm the first one that comes up anyway. But it's also caras-corner.com is how you can find me. I'm mostly, so when I started it, I just wrote sort of quite generally about my mental health, about like how things have been for me in the past and getting a diagnosis and things like that. And then over the years, it's kind of morphed into being a bit more like a diary sometimes, where I'll write about specific times where like I've been unwell and when I've relapsed. And like at the moment, it's really heavily focused on my treatment for my eating disorder and my recovery from that. But occasionally, like if I have like a bipolar episode, then I'll write about that as well. And I did that a couple of years ago when I got manic for the first time since I've been diagnosed, actually. So it took quite a lot of writing to kind of process that happening. So I kind of just use it a bit as like a diary, really, to process my thoughts. And then in the process, I just hope that I can help other people with that and kind of challenge some of the stereotypes and break down some of the stigma about different mental illnesses.
Okay, well, that sounds awesome. That's kind of the same thing that my blog is centered around as well. Not so much, obviously, the eating disorder aspect, but the stigma and bipolar disorder and what have you. Do you ever struggle with writer's block? Because I'm going through that myself right now.
I do, and actually one of the things I really think is quite difficult about blogging about your mental health is that obviously like most of the inspiration comes from being unwell. So I think when I have periods of time where I am like more stable, I feel like I have less to contribute, which
right.
I think is quite difficult. You don't want to be unwell, but I feel like a lot of people follow me because they get that like authenticity and they get my story and kind of how I am at the moment. And yeah, I feel like when I am in a better place, I can talk about things more like generically. But yeah, about like my own story, I do find that I get much more writer's block when I'm more well.
Yeah,
I get that.
Mm-hmm.
I do too. I think it's an aspect of creative people in general, you know, and they always say that the best artists are the most tortured, you know.
Yeah.
I know for me when I'm in a more difficult spot is when I have I do better with writing lyrics or music or, you know, something to that effect. It's, you can draw more inspiration from it, I guess, because people relate more versus, you know, hey, I'm having a great day, and then you end up with, you know, Pharrell's Happy or something like that. So, Cara, what is your best advice to combat negative self-talk?
What I've been doing, like a lot of in therapy at the moment, is we have been doing a lot of stuff around body image, and a lot of that has been thinking about all the things that your body does for you and what its function is rather than what it looks like. And that's been really helpful because it helps you to kind of appreciate what your body does, and also to be grateful for it, for like all the opportunities that it gives you. And like for me, a lot of it's about, actually, I've treated it really, really badly over the last like 18 years, and you know, it's still going, and actually I've been able to have loads of like really cool experiences in that time, and you know, it's got me to adulthood despite everything. So I find that really useful. And also thinking about all the qualities I have that are just nothing to do with what I look like at all. I also find it really useful to think about like how my friends would talk about me rather than how I talk about myself. And I had a therapy exercise a while ago, actually, where I had to ask my friends how they described me. And a lot of the words they used were things that I wouldn't even have thought of myself. So that was really useful. Mm-hmm. And I've written them all down in my journal, and I can go back and look over them and think, oh, people think these things about me that I didn't even know. So yeah, I think thinking about yourself, how other people would think about you is a really important one as well. And if you don't know, then you can just ask them, like if they're good friends and good family or whatever, then hopefully they'll be able to give you an answer.
Right.
It sounds like a pretty good exercise.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what's next for you?
Good question. I'm going to keep
working
on my
job. That's why we get paid
the
big bucks.
I really like to write a book one day, but I think that's quite far in the future. Career-wise, I want to train as a therapist as soon as I can, really, when the courses come up. In my sort of general well-being, I think I just want to keep focusing on my recovery and manage to get to it. I want to get further than I've ever got before. And my therapist says that at the moment, he's like, you're still choosing to be sort of like 20% anorexic. And as long as you're staying at 20%, your chances of being 100% are much higher, which makes complete sense. So I think, yeah, in terms of my recovery, I would really like to just push myself further than I ever have before to reduce my chances of being back in this situation where I'm back in treatment again and stuff. I've got a bit of a reputation at work of always being on holiday and traveling around a lot, and would really like to be able to start doing some of that again. But obviously with COVID, that makes it quite difficult. But I had to cancel a holiday this year because I wasn't well enough to go, which is, it did end up actually, it was in April, so I probably wouldn't have been able to go anyway because of COVID. But
yeah.
That I kind of had to cancel it because of my anorexia was really difficult. So I want to be in a place where I'm well enough to start doing all those things again.
That's a good goal to have.
Yeah, absolutely. And too, don't forget, we are very excited to have you back on our show again in December for our Keep Talking Mental Health Roundtable discussion, our fourth annual. So we're really looking forward to that as well.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, that'll be exciting.
We've got some great panelists. We've got Annalie Roberts. We've got Jackson Stone and Asante Houghton.
Houghton.
So, and obviously Kara.
Yeah, I'm really excited.
So, yeah, we've got a great panel, and we're really excited. These shows end up being really, really informative and really, I don't even know how to describe them. They're just, they're the highlight of the year for me. It's like our Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, it's a good time for sure.
Yeah, it sounds awesome.
So, oh, we're happy that you're going to be a part of it. That's definitely for sure. And that way we get to talk to you again, too. So there's that.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. We are actually winding down on our time. So before we go, how about you give out your social media in case anybody wants to reach out to you? They have any questions. They want to tell you how much they like your hair color. you name it.
So on Twitter and Instagram, I'm just at Cara Lizette, all one word. And then you can find me at my blog, which is caras-corner.com.
That's awesome.
And your last name is spelled L-I-S-E-T-T-E, right?
That's right, yeah. And Cara with
okay.
a C.
Yep, not a K. Like Supergirl.
Yeah.
It's okay, you're still our Supergirl. So it's good. It's all good. So, well, it's been a blast talking to you. I'm happy we were able to do this. We definitely love to have you back again. No, we're going to have you back again.
Yeah.
we'd love to have you back again after that. So you stay on the line, and everybody else, you're going to be listening to the song Your Magic by Matt Stern. And we hope you guys have a great day and a great weekend. And thanks for spending some time with us.
Yes, and we'll catch you next week.
Yep. Have a great weekend, everybody.
You are the best thing. You hold my heart inside your hands. You're magic. You make me crazy. Your touch, it makes makes me lose my head. Tragic. It's all over. That's what you said. It's all finished. Gonna lay in bed and tell your friends. They can leave when they want to. Touching makes me lose my head, it's tragic.